Welcome to the Product Design Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Coolin, founder of UX Cabin, where we create world-class web and mobile apps. I'm excited to bring you a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of some of the most interesting and talented people in product design. We'll get strategic advice on how they got to where they are today and things they wish they would have known earlier in their career. Hey everyone, welcome to the Product Design Podcast today. We have a really exciting show for you all today because we have another team member spotlight. Today we have Joseph Espana with us. He is a senior product designer that lives in California, and we've been working together for a little over a year now. Joseph, great to have you here, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's very exciting to be on the podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Joseph, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are, what you do, and where you live?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm Joseph Espana. I live in Palmdale, California, with my lovely two kids, Jace and Caitlin. If you've ever played like League of Legends or know about that Arcane show on Netflix, you probably recognize their names. And then my wife, Judy, too, as well. We've been living in Palmdale for the past like 7 years. Or some change. And yeah, it's about like in the upper tip of LA County. And yeah, so what I do, I'm senior product designer at UX Cabin. I've been there for about a year. It's been great just helping, you know, the clients there and product design over there. Been good. And yeah, I guess in terms of like hobbies, I definitely play a lot of video games, watch like anime, read manga, and definitely into like the Marvel movies and stuff. And also like dabble in like lettering on the side too when I can.
Very cool. Yeah. I don't know how you make time for all of that, but it sounds like tons of hobbies plus all of the life and home and work stuff on top of that. So that's pretty awesome, man. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into design in general and kind of your origin story?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I think really it all started like in middle school or like high school, you know, basically getting that fascination with like the web and computers. I remember back in the day, like constantly bugging my older sister for like use of her computer, you know, just being able to like, you know, mess around on that. And eventually I got my own, and I remember being on like sites like Angel Fire and GeoCities, like creating my own like website. I had this old like horrible, I'll never show it to anyone, but this old skateboarding blog back when I used to dabble in that, which just with a bunch of iframes and stuff and like images uploaded on Photo Bucket, you know? And then that eventually like turned, you know, we got like MySpace, and, you know, back in the day I would like copy and paste like HTML code into there to like make the most rad, like, you know, profile with background music and cursor effects and, you know, but that sort of like really was the beginning of my interest in the web. And, you know, eventually took like a class in web design in high school. And that's when I really like learned that I could actually like make money off of this stuff. You know, my teachers would say like, I made like $500 from this client that paid me to move this image from the left to the right, you know, and that was way back in the day. I was like, okay, maybe I can actually like, you know, consider this as a career now. And yeah, that eventually led to like going to college for that. Like I went to Cal State Northridge over here next to the Valley in LA, and spent 4 years there getting a major in graphic design. And just right out of college, did some work for a couple startups for their print materials and like landing pages and stuff like that. But it wasn't until like they came to me, like they were kind of pivoting into like product design at the time. And I was like the only designer. So they kind of asked me to, you know, help develop their product there. And that sort of like landed on my lap, I guess, UX and product design. And then that whole part of like iterating and learning about the UX process and even like coding and fit, that's been really like self-taught, I feel like, yeah, in a way, you know? Yeah. And definitely, like, luckily for me, I had that graphic design background too as well. So the visual design definitely like translated well into UX and product design. So that's been like great for me to at least be able to lean on those fundamentals.
For sure.
But yeah, definitely like a theme of my career. Yeah, would it be like learning and
I think it's really interesting how you kind of talked about when you first realized you could make money with web design. And I kind of feel like I had a similar epiphany when I was like dabbling with web design in college. Cause I was working normal, like minimum wage job. And, you know, you make as much money as you work, like however long it takes. But then I started to have these like clients that I would work with. And I was, you know, brand new, but there's a really sizable market for like high school or college age kids who want to help out small and local businesses for building sites for $500, $1,000, $2,000 that you could, you know, make a lot of money as a young person putting yourself through college or just making money on the side that you don't have to like go and get a minimum wage fast food job. You can build on these skills and give yourself something that you can build upon for the future. And I was like, just kind of clicked with me. I'm like, oh snap. Like not a lot of like my peers are doing this, and this could lead to like really lucrative future job opportunities aside from me just making money on the side. And it was just like, oh snap. Like, I don't have to have permission from anyone to do this. I can learn all this stuff on YouTube. Like, I don't have to go to a class for this, or I don't have to wait for someone to teach me. I can go get all the knowledge I want to get. And that was when I was like, oh, okay. Like, I want to do this. I want to learn more about it. And I want to like kind of go all in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like nowadays too, it's like way more accessible than it was back in the day. You know, like there's the advent of like YouTube and people offering up educational content, you know, for free that you can learn from. You know, there's definitely like a bunch of designers that I look up to that like offer up ways that what they learned and like even the job interview sort of phase and stuff like that, or how to freelance and stuff. It's definitely like a lot easier now than it was back in the day.
Absolutely. And it's so cool that like as a designer or even a developer, it's more so like, can you figure out the question you need to type into YouTube or Google to figure out what you need to like do and apply to your work? You don't have to have all of this knowledge just like contained in your head, like a doctor or something where you just have to know it on the spot. It's like you can usually have a little bit of time to do some research, look into design patterns or philosophies for how to do things. And it's like kind of changes from like, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to know what questions to ask. And that's a skill in and of itself, but it's something that's like, that was another epiphany that was like really freeing for me, where I felt like I could figure anything out if I just had the time to research it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I feel like Google's like one of my most used tools, I guess, in a way, you know, if I'm not in like Figma or Notion or something, like, yeah, I'm probably Googling something to make sure, oh yeah, well, what's that design pattern again?
You're right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There you go. That's probably what we should be doing. Yeah.
Totally. So you kind of learned some things in high school, went to college. Now, did you go to college for interactive media, or was it like more of a traditional graphic design degree?
Yeah. I would say more like traditional graphic design. Towards the end, like there was like a little bit of web in there, but it was like Dreamweaver kind of days. And, you know, we would code using that. Yeah, it wasn't like a lot of like web. It wasn't until like after, of course, like I graduated, they started getting more into like UX and product. And luckily I've been asked back a couple of times to like help out with the students in terms of just reviewing their portfolios or just presenting on the quick stuff of how it is to be a designer nowadays. But yeah, at the time, yeah, it was more like traditional kind of graphic design in a way.
Yeah. And then you said that like, as you got into things, the industry was changing and you kind of had an opportunity fall in your lap to do something more like web design, product design related. And like, was that something that you enjoyed the opportunity, or were you like, I kind of just want to stay in my lane here and do like what I was trained to do? How did that transition go?
Yeah, I would say it worked well. Yeah. Cause I definitely enjoyed working on products more than I did like coming up with a pamphlet for like a convention, you know, or like a marketing landing page, you know, that people probably could care less about. And like being able to come up with solutions to things for products that people would be able to use like a lot more and find more use in it that has more value for people. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So once you kind of got the taste of that, switched more into kind of this like UX product design focus, why don't you give us a little bit of just like your history of your career history of where you went and kind of the trajectory of your career from that point?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So like, yeah, I graduated back in like 2010, majoring myself now. Worked for like a couple startups for a couple of years there. Had a great boss in the beginning that taught me a lot for sure about like what it meant to work in that environment and what sometimes you need to do in order to get things done. And then after like working on their product for like a year or so, I went to like a Fortune 500 company in 2014 and worked there and learned a lot about like what it meant to work like in the agile environment with like scrum teams and different like product teams and how, you know, that work was divided up and really like about communicating with the team, like other developers and, you know, your product managers and, you know, how to present to like the director of marketing and like your sort of VPs and stuff. So learned a lot there for like the few years. And then, you know, once the pandemic hit, unfortunately, you know, I had to move on from that point and freelance for like a couple months. And yeah, eventually like found my way to UX Cabin, you know, where like, I think it was through like a Slack, I think the Design Social Club Slack, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was like through there.
Shout out to Charles over there.
Yeah, for sure. Found a job because of this community. But yeah, that was, that was great. Like, you know, getting in touch with that UX Cabin and working with them, you know, for the past year or so.
Yeah. I was going to say that's kind of a cool story in and of itself. I think I had reached out to that channel and then you responded to me, or I don't know if we had like an interview or something, but like we got rolling pretty much right away. I think that was an awesome fit to be able to find you when we really needed that work there. Why don't you just give us a little bit of insight as to how working at UX Cabin is and what your general day-to-day kind of looks like?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So generally I'm a early riser. Like I'm in the West Coast. Both of our clients, at least that I'm working with right now, are East Coast based, you know? So I'm usually like 3 hours behind in a way, but I like to try to get my day started early and sort of be more in their kind of working time zone. But I'll generally wake up like around 5 and then get like a workout in, take a quick shower and then try to get my day started like around 7 or 8, depending on like how long it takes me. And then from there, just depending on like the priorities of different things. So if like, let's say one particular client has a project that, you know, we need something done rather soon, like I'll probably handle that within the first half of the day. And then, you know, that could be from anything to like, depending on where the project is, like sketching or wireframes, prepping for like a user interview or prepping for like a design interview, or there could be like grooming sessions too as well, and like meetings or different things like that. I could be working on sketches or wireframes, prototypes, hi-fi designs and stuff like that. And then, yeah, kind of doing the same the later half of the day for like the other client and then just being able to work on stuff for them. And yeah, the things I like definitely about UX Cabin, like I definitely love like the remote aspect of that. You know, I definitely have a lot more time than I did before. Like before that, you know, I would work in an office and in LA, you know, it's notorious for its traffic.
Right.
So I'd take like total time in a day of traffic. I'd be sitting in my car driving maybe like 3 hours.
Wow.
You know, because I would drive from Palmdale, yeah, to Santa Clarita, which is maybe 40 miles out. And then that takes about like an hour, you know. Yeah, that was a lot of time spent in my car.
There's your workout time right there.
Yeah, you know, that's like I could get like a leg day routine lately and that amount of time. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely like gave me time back. And then, you know, I love just being able to take lunch and then like I'm there with my kids, like right out the door, you know, behind me, you know, see how their day is going. And they could tell me they really love their Lego set or, you know, like they could tell you how school's been, stuff like that.
But yeah, I feel like
they really love that. So
that aspect of being remote, like those two aspects are like so incredibly killer for just work-life balance. Like being able to go down and play with my kids for 15 minutes or be able to like go down and get a drink, say hi to them, to see how they're doing. It's like those little things added up throughout the day add up to be like a pretty good amount of time where if I was going into an office, maybe I see them before I leave and then maybe I see them when I get home. And then it's like you get a couple hours before bedtime. And it's like, man, I don't know if I could ever go back to that, you know?
Right. Same. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I can either. Yeah. Cause I feel like I have more like energy too, you know, just cause I'm not dealing with the traffic. Like I come back home from the office, I'm usually drained from like that hour car ride. But yeah, when working remotely, I just leave the office and then, you know, catch up with my kids, play with them, maybe play some video games or something, or watch the Netflix or catch up on One Piece or something like that. And
yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, thinking of like you right now in like a senior product design position and looking back over your career, have there been like specific high points and low points that you look back and can say like, this was a really rough time or this was a great time, and like anything that you've learned throughout those high and low points of your career thus far?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. I would say like definitely like one of the low points was like in the middle of the pandemic. Cause I've only ever been laid off once. And that was like right in the middle of a pandemic. I was working for like a company in the cruise industry. And, you know, as we know, the cruise industry got hit pretty hard during the beginning stages of that. And that was like around in June when I got laid off. And I remember a call that I had with like, you know, my boss and then like the VP of marketing there, and just getting like a pang of anxiety and almost felt like I was going to have like a panic attack, you know, at the time. I was just in my head, just wondering like, okay, like what are we going to do now that I don't have a job in the middle of a global pandemic, you know? And usually I'm kind of like go with the flow kind of guy. Like, you know, I'm just like, things will settle, you know? So my wife always tells me that she wish she could, I guess, be more of just kind of go with the flow. And in that case, I was definitely like anxious at all time high. And, you know, it got me thinking too, like, more of a self-reflection kind of way, you know, like, okay, like where can I go from here? What am I really good at? What do I want in the future? For sure. And I was able to get out of it in the end and sort of like up my confidence again eventually. And, you know, was able to, I feel like, kind of rise from the ashes from that.
The Phoenix. So,
yeah, like the Phoenix. Yeah, I definitely feel like everything came out better because of it anyways. So it's good. And yeah, I would say like in terms of like the high, it, you know, interestingly enough, the low kind of led to the high in a way. Cause you know, now I'm working remotely and in general, from a career standpoint, I think I'm kind of in the high right now because I'm working remotely and you know, I love working for UX Cabin too as well. Just in terms of the way we work, it definitely fits sort of what I like in terms of working for a company, working with a team. Like I definitely have team members that are very, very talented and that I could work and learn with. There's like other companies in the past that I've, you know, kind of been like micromanaged, but you definitely don't get that here. So I like being able to kind of work on my own in a way, cause I'm definitely like sort of, motivated like on my own to work like that. And then I always wanted to work remotely too as well. So being able to do that is just great. And yeah, there's like other on top of that too, there's other like milestones I think
sure.
I like to look back on in my career. I was asked like by some blogs like Lovers Magazine, like they have some really well-known designers on there. And I was surprisingly like asked to be featured on there too. And I didn't think at the time like, oh, did I receive the wrong email? Like they're really sending, like, you know,
reaching out. I remember reading that. Did they just like randomly reach out to you?
Yeah, I remember the exact time that I got it. I was in Vegas on a vacation. I was checking my email. I probably shouldn't have been checking my email anyways, but I'm glad I did. And I saw that like from William over there, you know, in Lovers Magazine, just sent me like a quick email, like, hey, would you like to be featured on here? I gotta show my wife, like, hey, check this out. They definitely responded back, even though I was like in a pool somewhere.
Yeah. But for those listening who aren't familiar with the magazine, we'll obviously link it up in the show notes, but can you give us a little kind of overview of what their magazine and platform is?
Yeah, sure. So they have like, you know, website where they feature, I think they do it like weekly with different designers and sort of showcase like what inspires them, different products that they feel is like great design and really about their journey in, you know, to design, either it be like graphic design, product design, different sort of aspects of that. And it just learn more about their life.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like loversmagazine.com, but yeah, you can go on there and then.
Yeah, man, that was awesome.
See all the feature designers.
We're all super pumped when you got on that. That was really, really a cool article for sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
But
yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Yeah. So wanted to kind of talk about the low for a second here. Like when that happened, when everything hit the fan and you were like laid off, how did you go about your next steps as to like what you wanted to do?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think there was probably like a couple of days where I didn't really feel like doing much. Thankfully though, at the time I was like working part-time as a mentor for like a product design bootcamp. So I still had some like funds coming,
sure,
in, which, you know, was not as like stressful than like nothing, you know, but yeah, eventually I just decided to reach out to everywhere. You know, I got on all these like different Slack communities and it just like reach out where I could on Twitter and email and just reach out to like my old coworkers or different contacts that I could and just started like interviewing places. It led to some like freelance gigs and stuff. Eventually just try to where I could be able to look on the internet where I could find different places to work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thinking of like your younger self and your time as a product designer, is there anything you wish you would have known starting out that you know now? Any advice you would have given your younger self as you were starting out?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would say definitely work smarter, not harder. You know, because it's like, especially early on, like my first couple of years designing, and especially for a startup, like it was not uncommon for me to work like 50 hours plus like maybe a weekend to get things done. The deadlines sort of never end in there. And then I'm young. I didn't really know how to like fight for myself or really, yeah, anything, I guess, in terms of working in that environment and just like being able to kind of balance work and life there. My girlfriend and now fiance or now wife at the time said that like I was like a robot basically during that time. I was just drained from like, you know, the startup life, I guess, there, and then just not being able to really do much other than just work and sleep and then maybe eat here or there. Yeah. So I would definitely tell myself that if, yeah, I had like a time machine, you know,
to go back and kind of put your foot down on some things and have some boundaries.
Yeah, for sure. You know? Yeah. And just like really prioritize like family and then work.
Yeah.
Know? And not the other way around. Yeah. Cause there's definitely like time that I wish I can get back now, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. Cause you think of like all of those like kitschy stories of people like at the end of their life, like what are you like looking back? What would you have done differently? And basically, nobody in those situations says like, I wish I would have worked more. I wish I would have closed another deal, or I wish I would have put like more hours in on this random weekend. It's always, always, always like, I wish I would have had more time with family or invested more in relationships or non-work related stuff. And
yeah,
it's really hard because I think, especially even in our culture, everything's very like career driven, career focused. Career is a ways that like you kind of define your success in a way. And I think it is healthy to sit back and always be evaluating the balance of your career and your work and putting those in proper priority.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like no one's been on their deathbed and just like, oh, I wish I got the CEO like 10% more or under return on investment. Yeah.
That has never been said. Hopefully never will be.
That's never. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really good. Thinking to your time, that wasn't too long ago. And I think some people don't realize that until they're in their 40s, 50s or later that, wow, I'm spending way too much time on something that, you know, ultimately is not family and is not part of my major priority list. And kudos to you for figuring that out before retirement.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I didn't really learn that lesson until like a few years ago, like really like recently. Cause even then, like when I moved on from a startup life, like I was working for like a Fortune 500 company and eventually like took on other jobs just cause like, oh, I wanted more money, I guess, in a way.
Sure.
Just being able to pay bills, I guess, easier. But I was working for, you know, part time that product design boot camp, and then like another startup in San Francisco, I was like helping with their iOS app. But eventually that got to me. Like I wasn't really eating right. Eventually, like ultimately led to me like just fainting in the middle of a convention floor.
Are you serious?
Adobe Max.
This sounds like a great story. What happened here?
Yeah. I guess, I mean, I wasn't eating right. I don't think I really ate anything that entire day. And then we were at the LA Convention Center, and it's pretty huge. And they have us like running around different venues here and there for their sort of, you know, classes, I guess you could say, or like, you know, keynotes and stuff. I was just kind of like, I guess, eating whatever I guess I could that was there, but it was mostly just like snacks and stuff they have at the conventions. Like, and then, yeah, they had like alcohol towards the end of it. I probably shouldn't have had that, like, swig of beer, I guess, because I don't think I had anything. Like I didn't really have much in my stomach other than like tater tots, I think, at the time. And I probably had ran or walked around like a few miles, I think, throughout the day. I don't know, but I remember I was in line for some swag, you know, the convention. Like I was trying to get like a shirt, and then next thing I know, I just remember feeling like really weird, like just kind of the whole room around me, I guess, was spinning. And I remember just trying to like fight it, like, okay, that's weird, but all right. Cause I've never fainted before. So I was kind of unfamiliar with the thing. And then next thing I know, I'm waking up to like the ceiling. And then my coworker is like, just kind of like checking on me, like, hey, you all right? Like, oh, okay. And I remember like getting up in the middle of the line. Everyone's like staring at me, you know? Turns out I was like out for maybe like 15 minutes, I think, according to my coworker. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long it was, but that's what he told me. And yeah, I remember like getting like a pain in my back. Apparently I fell onto like, they had the kind of like velvet kind of rope thing with the poles. They fell onto that and then on the floor, apparently. But yeah, they had, you know, gotten me over to the side. And luckily there was like, they called the medic team too as well. So they were just checking on me, but yeah, I was running myself ragged and hadn't eaten anything the whole day. And I think it just finally ended up on that.
Yeah.
That was sort of like the moment where I realized like, oh, I probably should be taking care of myself more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's totally a balance there. Cause like there's certain times I look back in my life where I was doing a ton of freelance work on top of like the day job and doing all these extra things, like trying to post on Dribbble, trying to make blog posts. And like for a time, I think those things can be helpful and valuable if you're trying to, you know, reach a goal or trying to up your game or trying to do something. But I think once it gets to the point where, yeah, like you said, you're acting like a robot or it's interfering with your health or it's becoming something that's just normal and standard to work, you know, 12, 15 hours a day. That might be a time where it's like, okay, I need to at least realize this, recognize it, and see like, is this what I want to be doing? Is this what I want to be investing in? Maybe for a time, like that makes sense. Like we all have weeks where we have to like, you know, put in a little extra, but it's like, if this is the norm, like, is this really what I should be putting my time towards long term? Or does there need to be a change? Some people like Gary Vee like to work 18 hours a day and it's just relaxing for them, you know, but for the rest of us, I think we have to take continually into account like priorities and is this what I want to be doing? And is this how I want my work and life to look over the long term?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It definitely takes some like self-reflection to sort of analyze, like if, like, is this really a good investment for me? You know, like you have to be selfish sometimes like that. Yeah. I feel like.
For sure. Another thing I wanted to touch on. So Joseph has kind of, you know, risen in the ranks of UX Cabin. He's been able to mentor a bunch of younger designers through our internship program. And knowing that we have a handful of people younger in their career listening to the podcast, I'm wondering if you could kind of give some insight into like what junior designers or new people to product design, what things can they focus on to really make their skill set valuable in the beginning? What kind of deficiencies do you typically see across younger designers that could be kind of like a guidance to them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would say from my experience, I see like the most sort of skill that like younger designers have kind of been like, I guess, lacking in, or at least like have trouble in, would be perhaps in like sort of the visual design aspect, or at least like being familiar with how the industry sort of like designs different like iOS apps and, you know, has different design patterns for certain solutions on products. So I would say like being able to look for those sources of inspiration and don't be afraid to like copy sort of different solutions. Like as long as it's not like a pixel for pixel copy, just being able to take inspiration from different, you know, apps, even if it's not like the same sort of industry or same field as that you're doing, as long as it makes sense for the solution or the task at hand that you're doing, being able to sort of copy that and lend that to your designs, I feel like would be, you know, definitely good in terms of like improving your visual design and being more like familiar with the fundamentals too as well. And I know we don't have to be like an encyclopedia in a way, but at least like being able to take, you know, the elements of that and being able to apply that to your visual design, you know, I feel it would be good. And in terms of like general sort of skills, or I guess soft skills, like being able to ask the right questions, you know, to like while you're sort of in those kickoff meetings too as well, or being able to follow up with clients and stuff if you have like questions, not really being too like by yourself in a silo. I feel like as a designer too, communication is definitely like important, and being like transparent on what you're working on and how things are sort of looking and getting feedback from the team in that way. Because definitely like, even if they're not designers, they could definitely provide like a lot of great feedback, or even like catch things in terms of design that you didn't think about. Like, oh, how come this solution works this way? Like, wouldn't this be easier? And like, oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I think as a younger designer, even myself starting out, it was kind of like, I didn't realize that patterns were patterns for a reason. They were meant to be used in certain scenarios. And I kind of thought like, well, I'm not a good designer if I don't come up with something completely new. And the idea of like you coming up with a completely new pattern for a progress stepper or a button and an input or a search or a nav bar is like, you're not going to do it. You're not going to figure out, you might, but it's not going to be good, right? There's established patterns for a lot of these things. And then there's different areas, whether it's like an illustration or a graphic or something, that you combine all these things that where you're going to get your unique, special, creative uniqueness. But for most of the common patterns, elements, and workflows, it's more so just having the discretion to know which one to use and when. And that requires looking and being really familiar with a lot of apps and a lot of patterns and a lot of designs.
Yep. Yeah. And there's definitely like tools out there that you could use, or websites that have sort of that collection for you, that I like to look at, or there's even Dribbble sometimes if you need to look at that. But there's other websites that have like go through the flow of things, or have a whole collection of like how certain apps sort of work. But yeah, there's definitely a lot more resources out there now than before.
Yeah. I kind of want people to start thinking about, you know, workflows in product design as, more so as like recipes rather than artwork. Because like if you copy artwork, that's like a big deal. That's like a big no-no. You're stealing an artist's like intellectual property. You're stealing, you know, the work they put into it. But like when you use a recipe for something, the person who made the original recipe is like, awesome, great. You're able to like enjoy that with your family. You're able to like share that. And I kind of think product design is more analogous to using a recipe than it is like copying artwork. Again, like you said, you don't want to steal the whole thing, intellectual property, pixel for pixel, but the overall like arrangement and hierarchy of something. Personally, I think those are recipes that we can mix and match and use throughout our products. And any industry that can kind of make the user experience better through shared patterns, I think is a win.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, because it leads to that whole like, you know, for the general user base to be more familiar with your product too. If everyone's kind of following like a similar design pattern or how like things work, I feel like it's better in the long run for everyone, you know?
Absolutely.
And I love that comparison too. Yeah, they're definitely recipes, I feel like.
Yeah.
Than like you're copying artwork, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So one other thing that's kind of interesting is like you have all these different designers that we work with on the team, and everyone's got their different strengths and weaknesses. And Joseph happens to be one of the most organized people I've ever met, at least from a design file perspective. Was that something that you've kind of like always had, like a meticulous organization of how you keep your artboards, or is that something that you have to like discipline yourself to do and go back and clean up over time?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would say like in the early days, I wasn't as organized, like maybe in my sort of like folder system on my own computer, but definitely in terms of like the files I had, I wasn't as organized for sure. Working on like Photoshop or...
Or you had to like, you know, hide layers to show different pages.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. And I definitely wouldn't name my layers as much as I do now. Yeah, so it was definitely a mess then, but it was something like more recently that I wanted to sort of get better at. I kind of learned that a little bit, like working for sort of like a corporation, because there's a lot of sort of red tape and like technical debt or even design debt that, you know, you try to learn going in, but you know, you're not going to really know all the ins and outs of the company within like the first day or something. So it was something that like I wanted to do moving forward, to be able to have sort of those notes. So that way, like 6 months later, I know why we made that decision, how we made a decision, how the design looked like at that time. So that way I can like, you know, be better move forward. But yeah,
I think that's so true. Cause it's almost like, it's one of those trade-off things where it's like, you know, you're iterating on something, it's messy, but you get it over, someone gets eyeballs on it and they give, you know, feedback, thumbs up, thumbs down, whatever. But it always happens where you come back 3, 6, 9 months later and you're like, you're trying to find something, you're trying to look for something, and you're just like stumbling over these artboards. You're stumbling over all of these different iterations. You're like, crap, what, where is that thing? So I think, you know, having a really organized file, having notes, having implementation assumptions for the developers on those files is something that really like is a time saver for you in the long run. Like you might think you're saving time, or you don't have time to clean up your file and to get it in the right order now, but it's like, you're going to pay for that later, where you're going to have to come back, reorganize it, reshuffle through this, or you can kind of do it as you go along the way. And be like, okay, this was designed on November 6th. We said this about it, and we know it's just, it's documented, it's there. And in my opinion, I think that saves you time in the long term, and it helps out the project managers, the devs, everyone in between.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I feel like that helps us like work asynchronously too. Like, just being able to have those like documents there, so anyone can like go on, they say this like Jira story and be able to see like notes, like a link to the Figma Loom video going over everything. And then the Figma also has like notes and arrows pointed to like, we made this change here because of X. And yeah, I feel like Loom just itself too, saved me like a lot of time, because you get those like notifications like, oh, this person has viewed like this video. And, you know, we've been launching some products for a client of ours just now. And I've been seeing like, you know, from developers, I've been like, oh, they watch this video. The QA analysts have watched this video. And I just think of like, oh man, I wonder like how many meetings I say myself just now.
Exactly.
From those like five notifications. Yeah.
That's what I love about like async is you send, if you have a meeting, a synchronous meeting with people, you are relying on the fact that everyone is listening to everything each other says, taking good notes, and then you're coming away from that remembering correctly what was said. But with something like a video or a Loom or a really nice written up post, like you can reference that as many times as you need. It's there. It's living forever. You can come back to it like months later. And I think, man, there is just so much opportunity and so much time saving in asynchronous communication that you can use to cut out current and future meetings. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I even watch like some videos of my own recordings just to get like a reminder, like, oh yeah, that's why we did that. Okay. All right. Yep. All right, I'm ready for this, you know, design.
Exactly. So kind of at the beginning of the podcast, we were talking a little bit about some of your hobbies and, you know, with your graphic design background, you're also pretty good at lettering and illustration. Now, I'm guessing that kind of was some of your more foundational work in your graphic design program, but maybe you can just give us a little bit of insight into like that hobby of yours and how you pursue it and get better at that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So definitely like my knowledge of typography, like sort of lends itself to like the lettering aspect. And that was sort of like why I was more interested in like lettering as well, because I was always like a fan of typography and just being like more interested in that. I always consider myself one of those designers that can't really draw, you know, at all. Like I took a illustration class at college, but I mean, I wasn't the best, you know? And yeah, I wanted to like improve upon those skills too. I mixed that and just like being, you know, in love with typography. I always love like different lettering artists that like I see on Instagram and online. I wanted to be able to do some of the work that they did. And you know, eventually like picked up sort of doing like a 100-day project. El Luna sort of inspired that in me. And I think it was from like another podcast that I heard her talking about that. But yeah, basically been trying to do that. And I don't get to like do a piece every day. I never have the time for that, but I at least try to get like every once in a while or every like few weeks, I try to get like another piece coming in. I took like a little break currently, but really wanting to like get back into it. Maybe over like the holidays and stuff. But from the beginning, it was definitely like a important note for myself just to get something out there, because it's all about like progress. I try to take it like in terms whenever I'm like sort of trying to improve my skills, like to kind of take note of where I'm at certain points and try to improve upon that, sort of like exercising. You're always trying to see if you can, you know, do bicep curls at like 30 pounds, you know, try next week. How about you try like 32 or something or a little more? So I'm trying to take sort of that logic into how I'm improving my skills, like in illustrating as well. So I take certain techniques or different sort of styles that I'm interested in to do for a specific piece. So I'll try that out. And if it didn't really come out the way I liked it, maybe I try it again next time, or try to like flip that and do like a different thing the next. So I'm seeing like where I sort of lean into in terms of like my skills and sort of lettering itself, and seeing like what I love doing specifically. Cause yeah, even in like lettering, there's sort of different styles I feel like within that artists sort of lean into. So I'm just trying to find my way.
Yeah. I think that's really cool too. Cause like those sort of hobbies, For a while, I had a hobby of just like doing UI outside of work. And anything like that, I think is really healthy, just because you don't have requirements. You don't have someone who has to like approve it. It's more so just you're kind of doing it for yourself. It's kind of exploratory and it's kind of fun. And I think there's a lot of growth to be had in that sort of environment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's all about like trying not to be so perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get it out there, see what the feedback is, and then try to improve upon that. Cause yeah, not everything's going to be pixel perfect. It's impossible.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Wanted to kind of get a little bit of your insight and wisdom for anyone who's kind of newer to product design and who's looking to get some advice or some traction on how to actually get into the field. Do you have any tips for someone starting out, whether it's tips about like putting their portfolio together or interviewing or focusing on certain skills that you would offer up to anyone getting into product design?
Yeah, I guess like in terms of like, you know, some of the first things to do, like definitely reach out, you know, to your network, reach out online for sure. There's definitely like a lot more opportunities, I think, now. And especially, I guess, at this point in time, I feel like the demand for designers is like sort of skyrocketed in a way. So there's definitely like a good demand for it. And yeah, just kind of putting yourself out there online, like whether that's Twitter or LinkedIn, even like Instagram, posting your work on there and seeing what people think, Dribbble and different Slack communities, like, you know, the one we found each other.
Exactly.
Design Social Club. Yeah. And I think Figma has one too. And I think there's even like Discord servers now that people are on, sort of newer
all
things.
Those young kids on Discord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that shifted from like just a gaming thing, or now it's kind of like everything in that.
I know.
But yeah. But yeah, there's definitely like areas where you can like branch out in there. And then YouTube definitely taught me, is still teaching me a lot of things about design in terms of like how to present your designs during an interview, or what questions specifically to ask, or like how they operate their user research process. That's something that I'm like still learning from, like how to better present on a second round of an interview, how to present your sort of research findings. There's definitely like a lot of great resources on YouTube too for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like anything you want to learn, you can learn. The hard part is just knowing what you should learn, right? Like knowing the learning path, knowing, is this valuable for me to be sinking my time into like doing poster tutorials if I want to be a web designer? You know, it's like, probably not. So it's just kind of like when you're young, getting into it brand new, it's like, it's almost like you need a mentor to kind of give you that learning path, right? And that's probably the trickiest part. Cause like once you get a good track or a good mentor, like it's just a matter of time until you are doing the right things, thinking along the right path, knowing what right questions to ask. I think in going along with kind of what you were saying about reaching out to people, we've had folks on the show who have gotten jobs just because they had a previous relationship with someone and they kind of had that like warm intro, foot in the door. And then after they had made a friendship, after they had established a relationship, it's a lot easier to talk about, hey, what do you want to do for your next opportunity? Or what are your goals for the next year? And being able to kind of have that foot in the door to talk about their job opening that they have or a career switch or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, referrals definitely help. Yeah, it's definitely like sort of that word of mouth kind of effect, being able to like reach out to your friends or coworkers or yeah, people that you meet online and then see if there's a good fit for you at their company or a company that they know of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Joseph, this has been an awesome time. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for all your awesome work. And on top of that, just sharing your wisdom with everyone here on the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. You know, it's been fun.
This has been great.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today on the Product Design Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, be sure and go follow our guest. Let them know they did a great job and you learned a lot. More to come in the following weeks as we bring on new guests. Please hit that subscribe button so that you will get these podcasts and learn a ton about the product design community. Excited to see you next time. Thanks.